Jim Ed was glad to get away. As they drove down the graded road, Wes leaned heavily against the passenger corner, his hat cushioning his head. He looked older than 77. He closed his eyes, and Jim Ed thought he'd gone to sleep.
I misjudged you, Tater. I wouldn't have imagined you had it in you.
Maybe I better take you into town and let a doctor look at you.
He's already looked at me. He just told me to take a pill, which I did, and to stay in my rocking chair, which I won't. And he'd charge me $30 I'd rather spend on whiskey. Let's get home.
Jim Ed had seen the same expression in his father's face often enough to know that further argument would be like putting up his hands to stop the wind.
Whatever you say.
The road passed under the truck a while.
Looks like your rock and roll t-shirt is totaled. Didn't do your little hat much good either.
That ought to tickle you.
I don't know. There's something to be said for a man who goes his own way and don't just run with the pack.
Wes reached down for the bottle on the floorboard and then changed his mind.
You hurting anywhere, Tater?
I'm hurting everywhere.
You'll hurt even worse tomorrow, but you done good today.
Glory B walked back to the branding pen when the last of the visiting help had loaded their horses into trailers and left. The calves had been turned into a large water lot with the cows to pair up. Glory B studied the ground, trying to remember just where the roan horse had gone down. Details were a blur to her.
Ow!
She touched her hand to her burning side where the whipsaw action of the rope had left a deep and ugly welt. Bill Roper approached.
What you looking for, Glory B?
The Pilgrim's knife. He dropped it along here somewhere.
Roper and Johnny joined her in sifting through the sand. At length, her toe struck something and she reached down.
Got it. The blade's still open.
Lucky some flanker didn't sit down on that. He'd have been marked for life.
Glory B beat the knife against her leg to knock out sand. She blew on it, tapped it against the palm of her hand a couple of times, and folded the blade.
I'll be going over sometime tomorrow to look in on Wes. I'll take that to him if you'd like me to.
She started to hand it to him, then changed her mind.
Maybe I want to go with you. To see about Wes.
You sure you didn't get hurt none?
Just a little rope burn is all. It's nowhere close to the heart.
That tater saved your bacon.
I didn't need him. Shorty would have gotten to me first if he hadn't stumbled.
Seems to me like Shorty used to stumble a lot on the football field.
Well, you'll remember that he stumbled the Big River Broncos into the first state championship they ever had.
Roper forfeited with a thin smile.
At least he's got a heart even bigger than his feet. Did you see him drag Tater out from under that horse?
I was kind of busy at the time.
He could have got kicked himself, but he moved right in there and pulled that boy out of the way.
That just backs up those people who call him a big, dumb football player.
But she felt a glow of pride in Shorty.
He never was one to worry much about consequences.
Roper turned to his son.
Johnny, you slip around yonder and open that waterlock gate so the cattle can go back out.
Yes, sir.
Real easy now. Want them to leave in their own slow time.
Okay.
Roper turned to finish loading the last of the branding equipment into the bed of the pickup. He had worked on the C-bar as far back as Glory B's memory carried. He was one of those quietly efficient men who always did more than his job demanded or than its pay scale justified. Glory B wished sometimes, when she allowed herself the leisure to think about it, that she could find a Bill Roper of her own age.
Hallie's one of the luckiest women I know.
Lately, Glory B sensed that he brooded about the survival of the ranch. He had as much at stake as Glory B, her mother, and her grandmother. Once Johnny Roper subtly opened the gate, the cattle made a careful exit in a deliberate walk. From the time of Glory B's great-grandfather Chatfield, the law on this ranch had been to handle cattle with gentleness and ease. Glory B walked to the pickup with Johnny.
Good job.
She put a hand on his shoulder.
Thanks.
He blushed. It was time, she decided, that she observed more formality with him. He had come to an age that he noticed girls.
Bill, if you'll take Roni in your trailer, I'll drive Graham home in her car. She looks tired.
You all spend as much time with her as you can. She's not getting any younger.
Glory B stared uncomfortably at Roper as he walked away. He had reminded her of Lavinia Dawson's mortality. She walked toward the old house. She found Hallie busily wiping the last of the dinnerware, stacking on the table that which was to go back to headquarters. A strand of brown hair hung over Hallie's face, a face Glory B regarded as prettier than her own.
It's been a long day, Hallie. I'll bet you and Bill will be glad to get to bed tonight.
Hallie's eyes twinkled as with some secret thought which she did not share. She tilted her head as a way of pointing.
Your grandmother's resting in the bedroom.
I think I'll take a cup of coffee for her just in case.
There were two bedrooms, and Glory B looked into the wrong one first. It was filled with small steel cots used by deer hunters who paid $2 an acre each fall for the pleasure of trudging these rough hills and, if lucky, getting to shoot at a whitetail. Glory B walked into the other bedroom, smaller but without the cots. Her grandmother lay propped up against some pillows atop the spread, a sweater across her legs to protect their slow circulation against a cool breeze that lifted flower print curtains away from the windowsill.
We're finished, Graham. I'll drive if you're ready to go home.
Lavinia Dawson cradled the coffee cup in wrinkled hands and inhaled the aroma as if it were roses. It seemed to Glory B that most elderly people she knew drew the breath of life itself from coffee.
You look wrung out, Graham. This old camp would make anybody tired. It looks tired itself.
Her grandmother gave her a long, slow smile.
Oh, you just don't have my memories of this place. When I was little, we used to come over here from headquarters and spend days at a time while the men worked cattle. My mother cooked in that kitchen for the working crew. I slept in this very room. That's why I never let them throw this old bed out and put cots in here. As long as I live, I want this room to stay the same as it's always been. See those curtains? I made them and put them in here. I've been putting fresh curtains in this room since I was 10 years old.
Glory B remembered, for she'd helped a couple of times.
I hate the thought that strangers will take over this ranch someday and tear down this old house. I hope it won't be done while I live.
I won't let them, Graham. I'll stand outside with a shotgun if I have to.
No, you won't. A far better thing for you to do is work and save this place for us, for you and your mother.
I'm not sure my mother wants it.
Don't you be so hard on your mother, girl. She just dances to a little different tune than the rest of us.
I wonder what tune she's dancing to tonight in San Antonio with that man.
She's a grown woman, living in that big house with nobody but two other women, you and me. You're old enough to understand that a grown woman needs things you and I can't give her. There's no reason she has to wear widow's black the rest of her life.
She'll never find another man like my daddy was.
Lavinia tenderly placed her hands against Glory B's cheeks.
Carr Dawson was my son long before he was your father. But it's been 2 years now. I've let go. You'll have to.
I don't want to let go.
But you must. If you want to honor his memory, the best way is to use that education you've been given. Bring in new ideas that can let us hold on to this ranch, his ranch.
Glory B had doubts, but she didn't want her grandmother to see them.
I'll do it, Graham. I'll do it if I have to bust a gut.
I wish you'd take the road I showed you yesterday, up to the top of the hill.
Jim Ed glanced a quick glance at his grandfather.
Don't you think I better get you home?
I am at home. Home is any place on this ranch.
He pointed at the road.
Go on, take it.
Wes's jaw was set like one of the hill country's stony ridges. Jim Ed turned into the twin ruts of the rough pasture road and gripped the steering wheel so tightly that his knuckles went white. He knew he stood an excellent chance of dropping one wheel off.
I always dreaded the thought of dying during a drought and being buried in the middle of a dusty, dry norther. I always thought I'd like to be buried in the rain.
Jim Ed thought uneasily that his grandfather had not regained all his color.
hell of a thing to be talking about.
Nothing would suit that lake promotion crowd better than for me to cash in without giving them a good fight.
I can't believe they'd want to see you dead just so they could build a lake.
I expect they'd take it as a sign that God loves fishermen and water skiers better than old cowboys and goat herders.
Wes lifted his eyes to a dark cloud far to the west.
Yeah, coming a rain over yonder. Maybe it'll drift to us tonight.
You don't really need one just yet.
A calf or a rain are welcome anytime. Here, stop here.
Looks out of the truck, Wes bent down and broke off a small handful of grass stems. His voice took on a note of pride.
Take a look at that, Teeter.
What?
That's side oats grandma, growing all the way up here to the top of the hill. Used to not see that except in the bottoms, and sometimes not there either.
Oh, see that big white-tailed buck at the edge of the live oaks?
Jim Ed blinked, surprised at his grandfather's sharp vision. The buck had to be a quarter mile away, edging carefully out from the protection of the timber to browse on some low-growing shrub.
That's old Snort. I've got a bunch of hunters who come from San Antonio every deer season. I tell them they can have any other deer on the place, but they're to leave old Snort alone. There's people that'd pay a lot to hang that rack of antlers in their trophy room.
God knows you could use the money.
Snort and me are buddies, sort of. He's part of this place.
He'll die of old age one of these days.
So will I. But till we do, we both belong where we're at.
Wes's eyes made Jim Ed turn away, uncomfortable.
Yesterday I brought you up here, but you couldn't see nothing. You still don't, do you?
I don't know what you want me to see.
You'll see it when you've been here long enough. I'll keep bringing you till you do. Enough of the pretty scenery. We got eggs together and a cow to milk and horses to feed.
The sheepdog Pepper followed the two men as they led the horses into the barn and went about the evening chores, rubbing down the horses, milking.
What does Pepper do all day when you don't take him with you?
I've caught him working the chickens, herding them up in a bunch like sheep. Blaze hell with egg production, but I don't need all that many eggs.
You don't need a milk cow either. It'd be cheaper to buy the little milk that you use.
You sound like your daddy's son, always figuring the money first. This place wouldn't seem complete without a milk cow. It'd mess up the whole pattern of the day. Milking starts the day and ends it.
Like the invocation and the benediction?
A man needs regular chores and a regular time to do them. Otherwise, he loses the order of his life. I think that's what kills so many old farts who retire to town and sit on the porch. They just go to waste there, rocking and rusting.
A little rocking wouldn't hurt you right now. I'll do the chores.
Well, I'll let you do the heavy lifting, but you don't know how to milk a cow.
I can learn.
Later. Right now, it'd tire me more to teach you than to do it myself.
I'll unsaddle your horse for you.
A cowboy saddles and unsaddles his own horse. I ain't no invalid yet.
The chores completed, under Wes's careful and patient direction, Jim Ed fetched the leftovers Hallie Roper had placed in the pickup. Their bulk and weight sent pain through his sore arms. Wes mounted the steps with more agility than Jim Ed was able to muster, his body aching in a dozen places. The dog stopped on the porch. The inside of the house was out of bounds. Wes held the door open for Jim Ed.
That's a good fella, Pepper.
He doesn't need family. He's got friends here, his dog and his horses. He doesn't need me.
He wished he were somewhere else, anywhere else, without a half-sick, crotchety old man to worry about. He emptied the sacks, setting aside food to warm for supper, and putting the rest away. Hallie had sent enough to feed them for several days. He turned on the oven to heat the beef and wished for his mother's microwave. Grandmother Maudie never acquired one, and Wes probably wouldn't know what it was for. Wes poured a drink from a bottle in the pantry.
You think that's good for you?
Are you a doctor?
No, but I remember what happened to you this afternoon.
Nothing happened this afternoon. A bunch of people got excited over nothing is all. Oh, when you get to be 77, you can give me advice about my health.
So long as he kept moving, Jim Head managed to hold the growing soreness at bay. But when he sat at the table to eat, it fell upon him with a force that almost offset the appetite the outdoors work had given him. Even Wes's coffee tasted tolerable. It was strong enough either to cure any ailment or kill on contact. The old man ate in thoughtful silence, staring through the open window. When he finished, he rocked back in his chair. He studied his big-knuckled hands.
All wrinkled and spotted up like an Appaloosa horse. You wouldn't think that these hands used to wrestle steers in the arena or grab a bucking horse by the ears and bring him to a stop. I just wished I could roll back about 50 years and start over, knowing everything I know now. Ain't no limit to what I could do with this place if I had that much time.
I wish you could do that.
I could, in a way, if I just had somebody young to pass on what I know. Somebody that'd have 50 years to use what I could teach him and what he could learn for himself.
Jim Ed looked away, knowing the direction the conversation was pointed.
When did you first start out to be a cowboy?
My old daddy carried me in front of him on the saddle before I was old enough to walk.
That's a problem, then. I'm 20-odd years too late already, even if I wanted to be a cowboy. I have neither the knack nor the interest.
Don't sound to me like you got much interest in anything.
There'll be something. I haven't come across it yet.
If you don't know what you're looking for, how you know when you find it?
That's a question I've asked myself after 4 years of college. 4 years wasted.
They don't have to be wasted. No more than Bill Roper's boy wastes the time he spends learning to be a hand. It always looked to me like the most important thing a boy learns in school is how to learn. He has to keep learning as long as he lives, because the world keeps changing on him as he goes along.
Like it's changed on you and left you behind.
I had a feeling once that if I didn't like what was going on in the rest of the world, I could just shut my gate. But the world kept climbing the fence and coming in. It taken one son away from me. In a way, it taken the other one, too. Now it's trying to take even this little old home place away from me. Acts like it's doing me a favor by giving me a chance to lay back and rest. But I ain't ready. When they carry me to the cemetery and put me down beside Marty, I'll get rest enough.
Wes seemed disoriented by the interruption. Jim Ed crossed into the living room and answered.
Hello?
It was Bill Roper, concerned about Wes's condition.
He swears he's all right, but he looks tired to me.
Wes trudged into the living room and reached for the phone, his face furrowed in reproach.
Hello? Are that you, Bill? Oh, hell, there ain't nothing wrong with me. Just ate a little too much dinner, though. Tater? Oh, he's all right. Going to be awful sore, but I figured on working that off of him building fence tomorrow. No, I don't need a day off. Good night's sleep, and I'll beat you in a foot race. Come over and try me.
He frowned at Jim Ed as if daring him to contradict.
Thanks for calling, but don't you lose no sleep over me. I'm a long ways from gone. All right, goodbye. I feel fine, and don't you be telling anybody otherwise.
He asked me, and I told him what I thought.
Wes studied him critically.
Your eyes show a little of your Uncle James Edward. But your mouth and jaw are your daddy's. I hope we can get along in spite of that.
Wes stretched out in his big recliner chair and began to read the Livestock Weekly, which Jim Ed had taken from the mailbox on their way home. He put his rancor behind him as easily as it had arisen.
When your daddy was young, I could sell a dozen calves for enough to buy me a new pickup. Now I'd have to sell 30. Every time prices get up to where the rancher and the farmer can make a living, some people holler to Washington about the high cost of eating.
I suppose.
Jim Ed had never given any consideration to livestock prices or costs of operation.
It used to be simple. When you sold something, you put the money in the bank. When you bought something, you taken it out. If you had more money at the end of the season than when you started, you had a good year. If you didn't have as much, you'd lost. Nowadays, it's too damned complicated.
That's how accountants like Dad make their living.
What kind of a living is it when you don't produce something real? Something you can eat or wear or ride in or get under when it rains? Your daddy spends his life working with papers, and when he's done, he hadn't produced a bite of food or as much as a cotton sock he can pull over his foot. It's like reaching up and grabbing a handful of air. You open your hand, and it's empty.
Jim Ed studied his grandfather with surprise.
That's why I lost interest my last year in school. That's what I try to tell Dad.
Wes lowered his chin and returned Jim Ed's stare over the reading glasses perched halfway down his nose.
Told him what?
Told him I didn't want to follow his footsteps and join him in the company. Told him I tried my best, but I couldn't find any substance in it.
What'd he say to that?
He said if I wanted substance, I'd look at his financial statement. I tried to tell him it's all paper. A whole economy is built on paper. Take the paper away and it all collapses.
All that's solid is buildings and machinery, people, and the land. The rest is artificial, like a hothouse plant. Set it in the sunshine and it's gone. Seems me and you see alike. So what have we been arguing about?
Wes eventually returned to his newspaper. Jim Ed finished the dishes and straightened up the kitchen. After a while, he heard music from the living room. His grandfather stood beside a record player, a couple of albums in his hands.
When I'm too tired to make music myself, it feels good to put a record on the Victrola.
Jim Ed had to smile. What his grandfather called a Victrola was a console stereo, another of Grandmother Maudie's purchases. Wes turned back and sat in his recliner, the albums in his hand.
I don't reckon it's your kind of music. Next time you're in town, you buy some records you like.
My music would drive you to the barn. I won't be staying here that long anyway.
How long will you be staying? Your daddy never said.
We'll just have to see.
Maybe long enough for me to educate you about music. Bet you didn't know me and your grandmother used to play for country dances in the old days. James Edward used to play with me sometimes. He was pretty good, too.
Wes stared toward the old picture on the mantel.
We had a polio epidemic in the 50s, along with the drought. It hit mostly young people. We thought he'd be safe out here in the country, but that pasture fence wasn't high enough. He'd taken the bulbar type and he was gone in 5 days.
Jim Ed had heard the story many times. Wes sat in silence, staring at the mantel. Jim Ed watched him uneasily, thinking he should try to get the old man's mind on something else.
I used to play the electric guitar in a little neighborhood band. Even got paid for a few gigs until my folks found out we were working in a beer joint.
He saw Wes's eyes come back into focus, no longer looking toward the mantle. Jim Ed took that as a favorable sign. Listening, he tried to hear the music as his grandfather must be hearing it, but it was like trying to see the ranch through Wes's eyes. The gap between them was wide, their shared experience narrow. He picked up the San Angelo Standard Times and sat down to read it, starting with the sports. He became aware after a time that the music had stopped again, but the old man didn't move. Asleep, Jim Ed thought. He watched a minute and saw no movement. He couldn't tell if Wes was breathing. He moved closer, alarm starting to build. He watched his grandfather and saw no sign of breathing. Wes appeared still as death. His heart, Jim Ed thought. Hesitantly, he reached out and touched Wes's arm, trying to remember just where to feel for a pulse. Wes looked around, startled.
Oh, he must have gone to sleep. You all right, Tater? You don't look good. The day's knocks are starting to fall in on you, ain't they?
I guess that's what it is. I think I'll go to bed.
Tomorrow's Sunday, day of rest. We'll sleep late.
Jim Ed watched his grandfather get up from his chair and pad off to his room in his socked feet, looking as if he had never known a sick day.
Good night.
Good night, Tater. Promise I won't wake you up playing the guitar.
Jim Ed had lain in bed perhaps half an hour, trying in vain to find a position that did not hurt. When the phone rang, he expected to hear his grandfather answer it. But after a few rings, he decided Wes was already asleep. Jim Ed slipped from the bed and found the telephone in the living room's darkness.
Hello?
Jim Ed?
Yes, Dad, it's me.
Then you got there all right. You ought to call to let us know you made it.
Granddad would have called you if I hadn't.
The mood you were in when you left, I thought you might decide to keep on going.
Yeah, the thought struck me. But I didn't have enough money to go very far.
If he had had the money, he would be in Europe with David and Jack. That was to have been his graduation present.
You getting along all right with your grandfather?
We're speaking.
How does he act? Does he seem all right?
Jim had wondered if he should mention Wes's heart condition.
He acts like he thinks he's 57 instead of 77. He has a mind of his own.
Ah, hell, I know that. Is he rational all the time?
Is anybody?
You know what I mean. Is he drinking a lot?
I wouldn't say it's a lot.
But he is drinking.
He's no teetotaler. But neither are you, neither am I.
Now don't evade the issue. You know why I sent you there.
I told you before I left home, I don't want to be a spy.
You're not spying. You're just watching out for him for his own good. Worst comes to worst, we have to challenge his competence in court. What you observe could be crucial.
You better not count on it.
That old place killed your grandmother. It'll kill him too. Now we'll make a home for him with us, or we can find a nice retirement home close by where some of us can look in on him.
That kind of company was the last thing Wes Hendricks would want, Jim Ed thought ruefully.
You just remember that you were sent there to do a job.
I haven't forgotten. I felt guilty every minute I've been around him.
There's no need for guilt. He'll thank us someday.
He won't. Not the last day he lives. Which won't be long if he has to move to the city.
You just tell him we all love him.
Damn poor way of showing it.
What did you say?
Nothing. Just say goodnight.
Goodnight.
Hand shaking, Jim Ed walked to the front door and stood a while, listening to the night sounds. Wes had been right. There was life out there.
Brothers and sisters, today let us consider our friends and our neighbors.
The church was no more than a third full, though this was a beautiful Sunday morning that, in Mayor Orville Levitt's view, should have packed the pews and had latecomers standing in the rear. But the congregation had gradually dwindled as farmers and ranchers moved away from Big River. Levitt stared distractedly at one of the stained glass windows. He hardly saw the window's colors, for his mind wandered off on a twisting trail provoked by the sermon. The preacher, Brother McDaniel, was so young he probably still wore the suit he bought for graduation exercises from seminary school.
Let us turn to Proverbs 18, verse 24. A man that hath friends must show himself friendly, and there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother.
Levitt's memory drifted back some 50 years to two young cowhands on the Chatfield Ranch, sharing a delicious sense of danger as each in his turn climbed upon a snorting, pawing bronc for a few moments of wild exhilaration. He remembered times when, to administer the screwworm medicine to afflicted cattle in their charge, they would rope a full-grown animal that outweighed their horses, each man knowing the other would rush to his aid if luck turned sour. Out of such sharing had grown friendship of the biblical mold, a bond Brother McDaniel was still too smooth-faced to understand, though he spoke of it. Now, as Orville Levitt and Wes Hendricks moved into the twilight of their lives, a shadow had fallen between them, and they were like strangers. His wife Noreen nudged him. He saw a mild reproach in her eyes, and he read on her lips a word spoken in silence. Listen. He gave her a curt nod that she could take for whatever she wanted it to be. They had lived together so long that he often suspected she could read his mind and know the thoughts he left unspoken.
And we read in Psalm 27, verse 10, Thine own friend and thy father's friend, forsake not.
The young minister's gaze lighted upon Levitt and remained, as if the scripture were read for his benefit alone. Levitt cast a suspicious glance at Noreen. His rump prickled with impatience through the remainder of the sermon, and he was glad when the final hymn began. He felt a desperate need of warm noon sunshine and the air fresh with the scent of roses blossoming at the front of the church. His legs ached from years of standing behind the counter in his drugstore, wishing in vain for the wind in his face, the rocking gait of a pacing horse, and the scent of new grass. Spring. He should be out there with it, he thought. Spring offers a winter-weary world an annual chance for renewal. He wished it could rejuvenate an old friendship lost. There had been a time, when they were younger, that he could have talked to Wes Hendricks and perhaps have brought him around to a different way of thinking. Now they were two old men, brittle like the dried-out stalks of last year's corn, no longer able to bend, standing futilely against the winds of time that one day soon must break them both. Noreen clung to Levitt's arm for support as they haltingly descended the steps of a brick church, a little shabby now, but reminiscent of better days. Brother McDaniel stood on the walk, shaking hands with each of his flock. Duty bade Levitt to approach the minister.
It was a fine sermon, preacher.
As a matter of fact, Brother Levitt, the topic was suggested by someone near and dear to you. She thought it apropos.
The druggist cast a knowing eye toward Noreen, a short little woman who had been a short, lithe young girl when Orville sold his saddle for Noreen's sake, most of 50 years ago. Walking on, safely out of the minister's hearing, Noreen squeezed her husband's arm.
The sermon made you think about Wes, didn't it?
I didn't need Brother McDaniel to remind me. Wes has already cost me a right smart of sleep.
Wes, or your conscience?
Noreen had been against the lake idea from the start.
It won't help the drugstore much unless you intend to start selling beer and fish bait.
He wished she could see his viewpoint. He motioned with his hand.
Use your eyes, Noreen. Look down the street and remember what our town used to be. The only thing that can turn it around is outside dollars coming in. That's what the lake can do for us.
But at what a cost to Wes.
When we first thought about the lake, we didn't know it would cover up Wes's land. It was our intention to help people, not hurt anybody. But we got to consider the good of the many and not the loss to one or two.
Would you feel that way if the land being taken was yours?
I'd like to believe I would. I have to believe I would.
I only know that Wes Hendricks is one of the best men who ever lived. That ranch was home to Marty and him for 40 years. You could at least wait until he's gone.
The town may be gone before he is.
They pulled away from the church crowd and crossed the asphalt pavement. Orville knew instinctively the horn was meant for him. He deposited Noreen safely on the sidewalk, and he turned to see a black automobile with a badge painted on its door, lights mounted on its top. Instead of getting out and coming to Levitt, Sheriff Wally Vincent remained behind the wheel and motioned for Levitt to come to him. Levitt gave Noreen a regretful glance.
I'll be back in a minute.
Vincent had the air conditioning running, but he rolled the window down as Levitt reached the car.
I talked to Matthew Jameson a while ago. He says we're still on for tonight.
Levitt frowned and fidgeted.
I'd rather take a whipping with a wet rope.
It's time we settled this thing with that old fart.
That old fart is a friend of mine, Wally.
That's why we want you to go with us. Maybe a friend can talk to him. And if a friend can't, then me and Matthew will. I'll pick you up about 5. He's always home at supper time.
I don't want anything unpleasant, Wally.
We're just gonna tell him the facts of life. One contrary old man can't block the wheels of progress.
Vincent left Levitt standing in the middle of the street with his hands in his pockets and a vague sense of humiliation. He was aware of Noreen watching him from the curb, making a judgment. He walked slowly toward her.
He treats you like you were working for him. After all, you are the mayor of this town.
He gave the street a long, sweeping study.
Mayor of this? It's old and worn out and useless, like I am.
Old you may be, but not worn out and not useless. You'll be a better man the last day you live than Wally Vincent will be on the best day he ever has.
Noreen was given to nagging at him sometimes, but she never failed to stand up for him when criticism arose from outside.
I've told you for years, Wally's the wrong man to be wearing that badge. He enjoys his authority too much. He should use it with a little regret. And you know he doesn't really care whether this town revives or not. He's just looking for a chance to get rich from that place of his.
If it was only Wally, I'd say the hell with it. But it's the last good chance this town likely ever have.
And what chance has Wes Hendricks got?
Orville Levitt felt it churning in his stomach.
Damn it, Noreen, you don't make this any easier.
Jim Ed had tried lying on his back, on his stomach, on one side and then the other. stretching out and pulling his knees up almost to his chin. Each position made him ache in a different way. Not until the wee hours of the morning did exhaustion finally drive him to sleep. It seemed only minutes before Wes flipped on the wall switch and the ceiling light struck Jim Ed in the eyes with a piercing glare.
Rise up, Cheater. The sun's already awake.
I thought we were going to sleep late.
We did. It's 6 o'clock. Old Red's ballin'. She don't know Sunday from Halloween.
Jim Ed lay a minute, staring up at the ceiling. Then he slid his feet out and let them touch the floor. He carefully sat on the edge of the bed.
The only cure for them sore muscles is to put them to work.
Oh, I thought Sunday was a day of rest.
Ain't nothing more restful to the mind than some simple chore like building fence. It's automatic, most of it, so your mind can run free. It can take you anywhere you want to go.
The only place I want to go is back to bed.
No, you'd be stiff and sore for a week. I've already put the coffee on. Don't let it boil over.
Wes walked out of the room with an easy step that made him seem 20 years younger than the old man who trembled and turned white the day before. Once Jim Ed was moving about, the aching lessened. He managed to have breakfast ready by the time his grandfather returned from the milk pen. Wes was pleased about the shower that had fallen during the night.
Almost half an inch. That'll keep the grass a-coming.
Maybe it's too wet for us to work on a fence.
No, the rain won't hurt us a bit. Where we'll be digging, it's mostly rock.
As he listened to his grandfather describe the ancestry of various cattle on the ranch, it came to Jim Ed that the cows held almost the status of yard pets.
Sounds like your livestock are pets.
That's about the only reason for keeping the old hussies. They lose money with every bite of grass they take. Man has to keep sheep and goats to support his cows.
Jim Ed frowned, remembering the stern counseling session his father gave him before he boarded the bus. Truman Hendricks said Wes had been borrowing against his land to keep his cow herd, hoping that by the grace of God and Safeway, a favorable market would eventually return. Those cows kept eating up much of the ranch's declining value.
Maybe that's one thing wrong with ranching. It's short on business principles and bogged down on sentiment.
He realized he sounded like his accountant father, analyzing a client's capital venture hip deep in the red.
It always was that way. For 100 years back, it's lost money more often than it's turned a profit.
Why do people stay if it doesn't make a living?
The new fence line was marked by stakes set in the ground, starting high on a rocky ridge and continuing in a narrow straight course down to an existing fence near the river. Where Wes had already made a start, posts stood like sentinels in formation for perhaps 200 yards from their starting place against another fence. Beyond this beginning, recently cut cedar posts and stays lay piled at intervals, awaiting use. Wes stopped the pickup near the first stake. He positioned himself squarely in the fence line and sighted first along the row of posts already set, then down the row of stakes trailing off toward the river.
Look at that straight line. Soil conservation boys surveyed it for me before talk ever started about that lake.
Jim Ed took stock of the posts already set, the many holes yet to be dug, the dozens of posts lying in wait. They represented a substantial investment of money, time, and labor.
They'll rip out all this when the dam comes in.
They ain't built that dam. This fence says they ain't going to. Let's unload them tools.
Wes gave Jim Ed a pair of old leather gloves.
You'll need these or your hands will be like hamburger.
He pulled up the stake and plunged a set of post hole diggers down over the small hole the stake's withdrawal had left. Steel barely pierced the dark soil's thin surface. He spread the handles apart and lifted up about enough soil to fill a coffee cup. Jim Ed watched his grandfather raise the diggers and drive them down as if he were trying to destroy that dam with his hands. Jim Ed reached for the diggers.
Maybe you've forgotten about yesterday, but I haven't.
His grandfather reluctantly relinquished his hold. Wes picked up a long steel rod flattened into a wedge shape on one end.
I'm afraid you'll mostly have to use the crowbar.
Jim Ed plunged the bar down again and again, chipping away at the stones, kneeling periodically with a scarred and bent coffee can to scoop out the broken and powdered pieces.
How the hell deep is this rock?
The smart boys say it's 10,000 feet, but we won't have to go that deep.
Jim Ed guessed he spent an hour chipping and hacking and cursing that hole before Wes declared it deep enough to hold the post against all challenges. Jim Ed dropped the heaviest end of a large cedar post into the rock-edged hole. Wes backed off a couple of paces and sighted along the finished line.
Hold her straight up, Tater. Ooch a little more to yonder way.
He came back and kicked the post at the ground level to scoot its base an inch farther south, then walked off and sighted again. Jim Ed wondered at his perfectionism.
Nobody'll see it.
I'll see it.
Wes began pushing dirt into the hole with his foot. When it had accumulated perhaps a foot deep along the bottom of the post, he fetched the crowbar and used its small end to tamp the dirt down solidly. By the time he was done, the post felt set in concrete. He sighted along its top and saw that it was perfectly in line. He felt an unexpected glow of accomplishment.
Yeah. This is your first fence post. You might want to carve your initials in it.
Jim Ed looked down the slope at the long line of stakes waiting to be replaced.
You know it's all for nothing.
Wes didn't acknowledge the comment. He picked up the diggers and marched toward the next stake. Jim Ed shook his head and carried the crowbar, wondering how a man's neck could get so stiff in just 77 years.
Have you told my father about your heart trouble?
I ain't got no heart trouble, and don't you be telling him.
He's all the family you've got. He has a right to know.
Your daddy and me always get along best when we stay a ways apart. Don't you be telling him a bunch of foolishness and bringing him out here for nothing.
I won't tell him, but you ought to.
Wes eyed Jim Ed critically.
Seems like you're mad at me and you're taking it out on the crowbar.
I'm mad at both of you. You and Dad have got an old grudge between you. Why? I don't know. And you've both put me in the middle.
That's why I place so much stock in friendship. A fella's got no choice about who's in his family. He can pick his friends to suit himself.
Wes finally made a halt for lunch. Dinner, he called it. He built a small fire inside a narrow circle of stones, filled a coffee pot from a big can of water in the pickup, and set it atop the stones. Jim Ed had not realized how hungry the work had made him. But Wes had been right about its taking the soreness out. He moved freely, with little pain. The coffee came to a boil about the time they finished eating the cold biscuits and bacon Wes had brought along. Wes poured it into two chipped enamel cups and gave Jim Ed a piece of Hallie's chocolate cake to wash down with the black coffee.
Well, how's this for a Sunday dinner?
My mother would say we ought to be in church.
Wes made a wide sweep with his hand.
Just look at that scenery, boy. Hell, we are in church.
Wes didn't call it quits until late afternoon. Jim Ed couldn't remember that he had ever worked such a long, hard day. He would not have expected to feel more exhilaration than exhaustion. He felt a curious sense of satisfaction. Back at the headquarters, he fed the horses but kept looking across the corrals to a round concrete water storage tank about 30 feet across and perhaps 5 feet deep.
The water looks good in that tank. Any objections if I go in for a little swim?
It ain't our house water. James Edwin and your daddy used to swim there.
Jim Ed fetched clean clothes from his room and laid them across an elevated pipe that carried windmill water into the tank. The dog Pepper watched with curiosity as Jim Ed stripped and climbed in.
Woohoo!
The water on top was warm from the sun, but a little deeper, it was almost cold. Jim Ed shivered until he became used to it. He was dimly aware that Pepper was barking, but in the cooling luxury of the water, he paid little attention. He didn't know a vehicle had driven up to the house until he heard two doors slam. He recognized Bill Roper's blue pickup. The C-Bar foreman walked up the steps to meet Wes, who had moved out onto the porch. Jim Ed assumed the other person to be Roper's son, Johnny. He didn't recognize Glory B. Dawson until she was halfway to the tank. He glanced quickly toward his clothes, but knew he didn't have time to reach them.
Damn that girl. She's done it to me again.
Jim Ed flattened himself against the cement tank's inside wall. He would not put it past Glory B to peer over the rim to see how clear the water was. She stopped and stared unflinchingly into his eyes. He felt she was laughing at him in some hidden place where he couldn't see.
How's the water?
Cool and wet. I don't suppose you'd want to come in and join me.
I don't have a bathing suit.
Neither do I.
Mischief danced in her dark brown eyes.
Sounds tempting. But Bill and your granddad are old-fashioned. They might frown on such untraditional behavior.
You wouldn't do it even if they weren't here.
I might, but you'd jump out of that tank and run like a scalded dog.
Jim Ed remembered a warm night, a moonlit Dallas backyard swimming pool, and a girl whose parents had flown to Houston for the weekend.
You might be wrong.
I suppose we'll never know, will we?
Come over sometime when nobody else is here.
She considered for a moment, the mischief not yet played out.
I still believe you'd run.
Yesterday, she had looked like a boy. Today, her gender was not in doubt. Her hair was brushed, her blouse and blue jeans appeared fresh out of the washer, and snug enough to stimulate a young male imagination. He suspected she wore them for his benefit, or perhaps for his frustration.
Besides, you don't appeal to my prurient interests with or without your clothes.
I'm glad to know you have prurient interests.
Oh, don't get your hopes up. I don't see much chance for you.
You might, if I were to climb out of here. I'm not kidding, I don't have any clothes on.
She grinned and stood her ground.
Put up or shut up.
All right, what did you come here for, just to gig me some more?
Bill Roper and I were worried about your granddad.
Bill Roper may have been, but you came over to see me.
Don't flatter yourself, Pilgrim. I found your pocket knife, that's all. I brought it to you.
You can lay it on my clothes as you leave, then I can get out of this tank.
That's what I was going to do in the first place. I just wanted to see which one of us would blink first.
She dropped his knife on the dry clothing and moved away, skipping more than walking. He waited until she was gone before he climbed out of the water and hurriedly put on the clean clothes without taking time to dry himself. Glory B was sitting on the porch steps and petting an appreciative Pepper when Jim Ed reached the house.
I didn't look even once.
She gave him time to acknowledge that minor courtesy.
I doubt I would have seen much anyway.
Do you try to get the best of everybody, or am I a special project?
You were yesterday. You reminded me of those self-appointed protectors of the urban faith that I ran into when I went off to college. They think a country girl is dumb as dirt, and just as easy to pick up. But since you're kin to Wes Hendricks, I'm thinking about giving you a second chance.
To do what?
I'll decide about that as we go along. Sit down.
He did, cautiously leaving space between them. The dog moved into the gap, inviting attention from either side.
I didn't thank you yesterday.
You sure didn't.
You must have known I meant to.
I knew no such thing. I thought you were telling me in your own cute way to go to hell.
If I'd meant to do that, I'd have left no doubt about it. I have trouble sometimes saying thanks. I never have trouble telling somebody to go to hell.
I'll bet that's the God's honest truth.
I'm good at other things, too, besides riding horses. Dancing, for instance. Do you dance?
I don't know if you'd call it dancing. It's probably not Big River style.
There's a place in town where a lot of us get together on Saturday nights. It's called the Blue Moon.
Sounds like a joint where you could get a beer bottle broken over your head.
You have something against beer?
No. As a matter of fact, I'm in favor of it.
Then you might enjoy the Blue Moon. We haven't had a pilgrim killed there in 2 or 3 weeks. Come in some Saturday night. We might even teach you a new step.
He sensed that she was still laughing at him a little.
Your cedar choppers might not let me in the door.
They're broad-minded, most of them. But it wouldn't hurt if you'd leave that dinky hat at home.
My hat goes where I go.
The dog looked up, suddenly alert, then quit the steps and trotted toward the road. It took a moment for the sound of an automobile to reach Jim Head. Wes and Roper walked out onto the porch as the car pulled into sight around a bend in the road.
It's a sheriff's car.
He glanced questioningly at Wes, then at Jim Head. The car pulled to a stop, dust drifting up onto the porch despite last night's rain. Sheriff Wally Vincent crawled from behind the wheel to stretch his legs. Druggist Orville Levitt opened a back door.
They got Matthew Jameson with him. My banker probably come to twist the screw another turn.
Maybe I ought to stay, Wes. You might need a witness.
Ain't the Chatfield Dawson Ranch already got enough trouble with the bank?
Matthew could call in a lot of notes on Miss Livy if he'd taken a notion.
You and Glory B go on along. I ain't fixing to hit anybody. I wouldn't give Wally the satisfaction.
Bill Roper shook Wes's hand.
You take care of yourself, then. And Tater, you see that he does.
Glory B shook Wes's hand first, then Jim Ed's.
You remember what I said about Saturday, Pilgrim?
She followed Roper out to the pickup. They spoke to the new arrivals, who were hanging back, obviously waiting for them to leave.
Hey, what's Saturday?
Nothing. I wouldn't like it anyway.
The three men stood in awkward impatience beside the sheriff's black car until Bill Roper's pickup was on its way. The dog ran along in the dust almost to the road's first bend. Orville Levitt shifted his weight nervously from one foot to the other. The tall sheriff drew on a cigarette as if for sustenance. Finally, Orville Levitt moved toward the steps, the other two falling in behind him.
Evening, Wes. Hope we haven't come at an inconvenient time.
Wes shook his head and forced a smile as weak as Levitt's.
If it wasn't you, it'd be some other son of a bitch. I was fixing to see what's in the icebox for supper. You all at?
The invitation came from civility, not from the heart. Levitt looked to his companions.
We're just here to talk.
Well then, you all come on in the house.
It would have been cooler on the porch, but hospitality demanded more, even at the price of discomfort.
How's Noreen?
All right. Getting around a little slow, but we're all doing that, I suppose.
Mighty good woman, Noreen.
The banker gave Jim Ed a quizzical look, as if wondering whether he should offer his hand.
This is Tater.
Levitt had a stronger handshake than the banker. The sheriff gave Jim Ed only a dark nod.
I recall you having an ice cream cone in the drugstore when you were just a boy. Things change. We don't have any ice cream anymore.
Or much of a town, either.
Wes stopped by his own chair as if to stake his claim and motioned for the visitors to seat themselves. The next 15 minutes merely proved to each man that his position stood as immovable as the fence posts Jim Ed set that day.
I've got no objection to him having a lake. I just don't want him to cover up my ranch with it.
But the engineers have surveyed this river for miles in all directions. They say Wally's ranch is optimum for a dam site. Yours offers the best storage for the main body of water.
They named at least two more places. Build in one of those.
But those are too far downstream to help Big River much. You know our town is sick. It needs a shot in the arm.
So do all the towns downstream.
Well, let those towns watch out for themselves. We're trying to take care of what's ours.
So am I.
Jameson gave the sheriff a cautioning glance.
I never could understand why ranchers get sentimental over a pile of rocks and cedar brush. You've got to look at them strictly from a business point of view. A ranch is just a factory, nothing more. Where others produce cars or refrigerators, a ranch produces beef and mutton, wool and mohair. That land out yonder is nothing more than a production floor, and the livestock is nothing more than the working machinery. They take the raw materials, the grass and weeds and the brush, and they convert them into the finished products. One cow, one piece of land is about the same as any other. The only difference that matters is in how much they'll produce. Anything more than that is pure romanticism. This is the real world we're living in, Wes. We've had to outgrow romanticism.
Levitt spread his fingers and stared at them.
We've been good friends a long time, Wes.
It hurts me to see us fall out in our old age.
It ain't the way I'd want it either. But it ain't like Big River had floods that put lives and property in danger. It never did. It ain't like Big River had to have drinking water. It's always had more than it needed. You all just want the lake for a playground, so tourists will come and drop money on you. This old ranch is like a child to me, and you'd drown it. If the Lord had wanted a lake here, he'd have slid a hill down into the river.
Wes and his visitors avoided looking at one another. The sheriff surveyed his two companions in anger.
Well, it's all been said, ain't it?
He shifted his eyes to Wes.
Oh, man, all I can say is you better watch yourself when you come to my town.
Wally, shut up.
Banker Jameson pushed to his feet.
I'm sorry it's come to this, Wes, but I have to tell you, our institution can no longer extend credit to a losing operation that has no future.
You've made a lot of money off me over the years, Matthew. The interest I've paid you probably built the west wing of that bank.
These are changing times. We've had to look to the highest economic use. We ride the ship or we're left drowning in its wake.
Jameson and the sheriff moved to the front door. Orville Levitt hung back, pain in his eyes.
You've said no tonight, Wes. And we'll talk about it no further now, but maybe tomorrow. Or the next day, or the next. You'll see things in a different light. Give me a call if you decide to talk. Anytime, day or night.
Wes started to put his hand forward, but stopped himself.
Don't you be setting up waiting, Orv. You need your rest.
Levitt paused in the doorway.
I have a mental picture, Wes, of you and me sitting in a boat together with our feet propped up and lines in the water. We're both old enough that all we ought to do is go fishing.
Never had time to learn how.
That's a pity. You could have time now. Well, so long, Wes.
So long, Orv. You watch out for yourself and Noreen.
Jim Ed sat on the porch, and Wes stood inside the screen door, watching the men drive away. Presently, Jim Ed heard the pantry door open and close. Wes walked out onto the porch, carrying a water glass half filled with raw whiskey. He slumped into a hide-bottomed chair. Jim Ed looked darkly at the glass, but said nothing. Wes saw the look.
You got to drown out the noise of them damned motorboats.
Wes sipped the whiskey until he had put away half of it.
You hungry?
Some.
Wes stared into the glass.
Well, you go on in and rustle up something for yourself. I've lost my appetite.